Jason from Janelle. Good morning. Sorry for my hot voice. It's the time of the year. So I'm Priscilla Temba, the chairperson of Labor and Public Enterprises. We were there at Janelle. We visited Janelle. I don't you were not there, group CEO, group executive. You were not there when we visited, but now I hope today's discussions will actually enlighten us so that we see where your problems are, your challenges, and everything that is that wants the committee to know and understand. And the committee will then engage with you. As I said, I'm the chairperson, and I represent Mpumalanga province in the National Council of Provinces. And this is the select committee. The select committee. Last time you met with the portfolio committee, so there's a difference between the two houses. Most of these institutions, they don't realize the NCOP. They, when they are out there, they think, oh, no, that's the smaller house that is there. And this is the upper house, if I can say. Members will introduce themselves. Honorable.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm Herman Groenewald, also a member of the Select Committee, and I'm representing the Northwest Province.
Member of the committee, Mpumalanga province.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, everybody. I'm Brisela Jacobs, representing the Free State.
Morning, Chair. Good morning, everybody. I'm Chilesha from PNG.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Sina Pochana, Group Communication Manager from DINA.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Renelle Barreta, and I'm the researcher for the committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Loli Sibisi. I'm the committee secretary.
Good morning. My name is Sam from the Department of Public Enterprises. I'm Parliamentary Liaison Officer.
Thank you very much. Without any waste of time, Mr. Saluji, can you zoom into the presentation? But let me just comment. Doesn't mean to say Janelle. If it's Janelle, it mustn't have more women. We must also make sure that we recruit women in this field, and especially women to lead dinner. I'm not undermining you, but it's a fact, it's time for women to. It was on a lighter note. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. No, I take that very seriously, and we will address that in our deliberations. Just maybe a few comments. I've just been appointed as the group CEO. In the middle of January, so I've just been there about 3 months now. Mike has just been appointed permanently into his position about 3 weeks ago. So the two of us are quite new to the Janelle environment. Sina and Sikile have been with the organization for a longer period. Our understanding of this presentation is we're going to present to you the results of the 2010-11 financial year And what we're essentially going to do is give you an overview of what the performance of Denel has been up to now, and some of the issues, the challenges, the mandates, and the new perspective that we have tried to forge for Denel going into the future. I think you will also appreciate the fact that Denel, over the last 2 years, have been going through a number of different changes. The change, the turnover of CEOs, as you may be aware, has been quite frequent. So one hopes that, you know, there will be some continuity now and a new approach to some of the challenges that we've been having. Since I've been appointed into this position, there have been a number of interventions that we have made, and hopefully you will see those interventions being presented to you today, which address themselves to issues in a more fundamental way, such as the transformation of the organization, such as how do we actually make this organization into a dynamic national asset which reflects the imperatives that government has set for ourselves. And hopefully we will engage in the discussion after we've gone through the presentation. So what I intend to do is just to give you a high-level overview of Denel's mandate and some of the key issues that we're busy with. Fikile then is going to deal with the performance of Denel over the last financial year as the Chief Financial Officer. Mike is going to deal with some of the transformation issues, and Sina will talk, I hope, on some of the challenges on the communications and communications front. But as you know, we report directly to the Public Enterprises Department, and we have a shareholders compact with them. Chair, I assume you've got the presentation in front of you. So if we go to the presentation starting on page 3. The shareholders compact is essentially an agreement, a contract between Denel and our principal, DPE, which sets certain key objectives that we have to fulfill. Okay? And one of those is to supply strategic defense capabilities and technology primarily to South African National Defense Force in order to fulfill its obligation of securing the territorial integrity of our country. What is interesting is that if you look at that sentence, it says on a commercially viable basis. Okay? And that essentially has been one of our biggest challenges. Okay? How do you provide these kind of strategic capabilities and technology and still become a sustainable organization from a commercial financial perspective? And if you look at the performance of Denel over the last few years, it has been precisely that challenge that has dwarfed this organization for all these years. But if you look at the developmental challenges of our country, and if you look at the new economic growth path and the role of state enterprises, state-owned companies, we also absolutely have to act as a mechanism, as a catalyst for advanced manufacturing in the broader economy, skills development to increase our human capital base, to increase jobs within the environment, and to act as a technology accelerator in order to give impetus to some of the economic initiatives that government has set for ourselves. Of course, when you're talking about how to become commercially viable, I think we are all aware of the fact that there have been a number of very fundamental challenges when it comes to the budgetary constraints on the National Defense Force. So in as much as we provide strategic defense capabilities and technologies to the Defense Force, we're also very cognizant of the fact that the budgetary pressures force us to a large extent, not only because of budgetary pressures, but because of also foreign policy issues and bilateral commitments, to seek revenue streams outside of our primary customer, which is the SANDF. So one of the key objectives is also to look at how do we improve our revenue streams from export orders, also to contribute to the economy from a foreign exchange perspective. So having laid that as a background, and that's the mandate that we have been given by the minister and by the department, the vision of Denel is encapsulated in the fact that we need to be a credible, and I think credible is an important word there, state-owned South African strategic partner for innovative defense, security, and related technology solutions. And I think what why I say credible is important is that we've got to ensure that within civil society and within the broader public and within government and parliament is that we are viewed as an organization that commits itself to being credible and legitimate in the way and manner in which we conduct ourselves. So if you look at the purpose of why we exist, the reason for existence, I mean, obviously it is to supply the defense and security environment with these kind of strategic technologies and capabilities. And there are not many other defense industry companies in this country that can provide those kind of products, services, and support that Denel provides. As I've indicated earlier on, to leverage on those indigenous capabilities, where South Africa in many instances is amongst the world's leading technology producers in certain environments, which we want to take into the external environment. And of course, the developmental challenges of government is our developmental challenges as well. And how do we contribute to job creation, skills development, social investment, enhancing local technology and the manufacturing base, particularly in areas like, for example, the aerospace environment. How do we contribute to supplier development? How do we contribute to the growth and further development of SMEs within the supply chain? And how do we exploit commercial use of technology as a spin-off from the defense environment? I think that has also been quite a challenge for us in that we've not been that successful in doing that, although in some instances there has been some progress. And how do we contribute to the foreign policy and regional security objectives of our country by utilizing Denel as a mechanism, as a vehicle through which we can strengthen our bilateral and multilateral cooperation with other countries? And I think part of the issue of the credibility of this organization has to do with what we consider to be a good corporate citizen. And there are essentially two issues, and I think that addresses and talks to the fact that there has to be extremely good governance of this organization, particularly given the environment within which we operate. The corporate governance issues are very critical to the manner and our very existence of how we work. We also believe that good corporate governance, which is an imperative and is essential, also leads to sustainability, and that's why it is so critical for us to ensure that we commit ourselves to it, and not only commit ourselves to it, but to implement it as well. And of course, another fundamental issue is the issue of transformation and employee well-being. And transformation in particular, I think given the legacy and the history of this organization, we have some very serious challenges in how we address the transformation issues within an environment which has historically been not reflective of the transformation imperatives of our country. So if we look at the vision and the purpose, what do we actually offer if we say that we are a strategic partner for innovative defense and technology solutions? If you go to the next slide, you'll see that Denel is a multifaceted organization. It ranges from providing humanitarian demining services and products, I mean, which is assisting, for example, the United Nations in many countries to create safer environments and safer communities post-conflict. And we have a very strong capability within the aerospace environment, where we're one of the few countries, developing countries, which actually have a very strong maintenance, repair, and organization capability in the aerospace environment. Denel Aviation and Denel Saab Aerostructures are key examples of the kind of technology drivers which can put us at the forefront of innovative manufacturing within the aerospace environment. We not only provide the maintenance and repair capability, but as a turnkey solution, we also provide significant technical training in order to maintain the skills base and human capital base, which will allow us to create a sustainable environment going into the future. And then, of course, you come to the sharp end of where our real core skills are, within, for example, the munitions and subcomponents, which is a critical capability requirement of the South African National Defense Force. We're also a world leader in mine-protected vehicles. I think some of the vehicle technology that we have here within the defense and security environment are world-class. And I think a technology that we are particularly proud of is our missile technology. The missile technology, there are very few countries in the world that have the kind of missile technology, capability, and the human capital that we have vested within Tinel to produce and develop the kind of technology within the missile environment that we have. We also do a lot of high-level strategic, and I think this is what's important, that Tinel in many instances is involved in the strategic and sovereign technologies within the defense and security environment that contributes to the national security strategy of our country. For example, on the command and control side, we provide the ground-based air defense system for the South African National Defense Force, which is a very critical capability in order to ensure the safety of our airspace. And then, of course, we're also considered to be one of the few countries in the world that has the capability within artillery, infantry, and armor systems, for example, our G5 and G6 guns, and our infantry fighting combat vehicles, where we provide the turret technology. And, of course, I mean, we're very proud of the fact that we have significant engineering skills within the organization. I think one of the interesting things, and you've visited Tinel already, is that we are one of the few countries in the world that has the capability to provide unmanned aerial vehicle systems. And I think the future, one of the key elements driving future technology within the defense environment worldwide is the ability to have your own indigenous capability for unmanned aerial vehicles, and we have that within Tinel. So you can see, I mean, it is quite a significant level of contribution in terms of technology, products, and services that we render to the South African National Defense Force in defense of our country and sovereignty. We've organized ourselves into four different clusters, and I think if you go to the next page, we've got defense, where a number of different companies are located within that environment, which provide purely defense-related technologies. Then we have a security cluster, which provides what we call civil security humanitarian capabilities. And this is an interesting concept, because for the first time we are moving away from just the purely defense technologies, but also to look at how do we contribute to safer societies and communities within the civil security environment. So, for example, how do we assist the police or border control or customs, home affairs, that kind of stuff. Then we've got the cluster which deals specifically with training and certification. What you see there at the bottom is OTR, Overbird Test Range. It is one of the few facilities in the world that provide that kind of evaluation, monitoring, and test capabilities for aerospace industries. So many different defense forces, and particularly air forces, use that facility to come and test their aerospace capabilities and technologies. Okay. And then, of course, on the aerostructure side, we've got Tinel Aerostructures, which provides manufactured components for aircraft building. You are familiar with the A400M program, which is the military aircraft from EADS, the European company. We provide a significant number of their components that go into building and manufacturing that aircraft. So those are the four clusters that we have organized ourselves into. And then if you look at the Tinel group structure, as I've indicated, we fall directly under the Minister of Public Enterprises, but our key client, okay, is the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans. Okay, so the Chief of the National Defense Force, the Secretary of Defense and Arms Corps, our key stakeholders and clients. Okay. And we interact with them, obviously, on a daily basis to ensure that we supply them not only in terms of the technology, but contractually, within the kind of obligations that we have set for ourselves. If you look at the number of employees that we have in Tinel, and it's not insignificant, we are almost 6,400 people within the organization. Okay. You are aware of the fact that we also have a number of associated companies, three in particular, where the strategy of Tinel a few years ago was to find strategic international equity partners, and they did that for three organizations, and those are what we call associated companies. And they make up about 1,700 employees. And the rest of Tinel, which are solely Tinel employees, are about 4,700 employees. What is interesting is that, given that number, 6,400, we have a direct multiplication factor of times 6 in the South African economy. And that shows the value of Tinel, which has a spin-off effect on generating jobs and creating more economic value within the country. If you look at our revenue stream, For 2010, 2011, we're almost 60% local, so we source most of about 60% of our work locally, and about 40% from export. We are hoping to increase that quite significantly so that we can expand our export footprint. Okay. And I'm not going to go through it, but you can see the different Danel business entities at the bottom there, and on the right-hand side you'll see which are the associated companies. Okay. So you can see it's quite a big organization, and the challenges associated with an organization of this kind are also quite significant. Okay, so that just contextualizes where we are within the Danel environment and what do we do, what's our purpose, what is our mission, what is the reason for existence. And I'm now going to give over to Fikile to address some of the issues related to the financial performance, financial progress. You know that Danel has been dogged, as I've indicated earlier on, for many years with poor financial performance and a number of financial pressures that we have had to contend with. And he will sketch the current situation and where hopefully we are going to in the next few years in terms of trying to turn the situation in order to create a sustainable environment and contribute significantly to the further development of our economy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Riaz, and thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. If you see on page 9, we are sort of reflecting how far we've gone against the very specific objectives that we agree with the ministry on a yearly basis. One of the key areas is that we must retain the key capabilities that the CEO has referred to. So we can't be closing down certain things without following necessary authorization, etc. So retention of capabilities is critical. Ensuring that we assist at the local market, which is the DoD, ensuring that we execute effectively and deliver on the programs that we've been contracted to do, promoting advanced manufacturing, investing in research and development, all of these areas that we specifically contract for with the ministry. We've rated those, and you can see the majority of those we have delivered on that as they are reflected as green. There are challenges that you can see in terms of profitability. Even though we were profitable in the year 2010-2011, there are some challenges there, and then I'll deal with that a little bit later. The company has a high debt and gearing levels than it should or has been expected, and that's another challenge. And the level of productivity, if one looks at the revenue that we generate per employee, there are challenges there. And the operating costs, but we'll tell clearly how those challenges are to be addressed going forward. If we go to the next slide, or page 11, we're just reflecting at a high level to say that this is an organization that has had challenges going into the past, and those challenges are progressively being managed, and the challenges are becoming under control, as you could see. Slide was worse, particularly in 2005, also worse in terms of profitability in 2006, but those are beginning to incrementally be managed positively, and we are seeing that those issues becoming under control. If we go to page 12, we, in summary, we achieved a profit of 111 million in the year 2010-2011, but those results were underpinned by a number of once-off items that are not really, were unexpected. Otherwise, we would have still been in the red. But I'm also quite happy to, quite a bit of an awkward to present around this time in the committee, because also we're looking at the 2011-2012 results. But it shows that I can comfortably assure the committee that we're beginning to substantially improve in terms of financial performance. But again, last year we were positive, and we would otherwise have been negative, still in the red, but there is a future that shows that we are beginning to improve substantially. The next slide just summarizes and says that if you take those four clusters and take one cluster out, which is aerostructures, how would we have performed? We would have
steadily performed positively, and that's what this page 13 is reflecting, is that we're beginning to, particularly those two, three clusters, defense, security, and certification, beginning to perform positively. If you now go to the next slide, the error structure is improving, but it also continues to have challenges. So if you analyze the general results, you'll find that the error structure is still in the red and is the one that contributes to our problems the most, or has been contributing the most. And that, in any sense, the message I wish to communicate there. On page, the next slide, on page 16, it is a summary of the income statement showing revenue, showing the gross profit, showing the extent of operating costs, and the bottom line of 111 million. We also, on page 17, showing where our revenue comes from. As Riaz has pointed out, our revenue comes mainly from the South African market, in support of the UD, SAPS, and other state agencies. And other markets, the second biggest market would be Middle East, followed by Europe, and a bit of North America. And we haven't made a significant progress in the African continent. Of course, we do have strategies that are seeking to improve our penetration of that particular market. The next slide, page 18, is the balance sheet. The important point or important message to derive out of this one is the fact that our balance sheet is weak, bearing in mind that there is a high debt level at 1.8 billion. But the balance sheet in 2010, 2011 was better in relation to the balance sheet in the year before, because we were in a profit position, and we will continue to manage that balance sheet positively. The page 19 is a summary of our debt level and the summary of our debt position. Page 20 is a cash flow, to say analysis in summary, our cash flow, which is a summary of cash flow from operating activities, continue to be negative. We have had receipts from customers, positive number. At an overall level, we were at a negative cash flow position of 226 million. On page 21, which I think deals with one of the points that we in the brief, briefing to us, where we have to talk about the risk reports and the performance information. In summary, we have had a clean internal and external audit report. And if you go to our annual report, you will find that the auditors are drawing an emphasis on the going concern, where they point out that the company has challenges with regard to issues of the extent which has been capitalized, but those issues are being managed between the shareholder and ourselves. But we had a clean internal and external audit report. There are no issues to bring to the attention of this house other than the issues relating to the extent which we are capitalized. The other important point is that there were no governance issues. There were no non-compliance issues with international codes, laws, and regulations. We had a sound and functioning board. We had appropriate risk management and governance processes in place. We had implemented King 3, which was a new compliance mechanism that needed to be implemented as of last year. There were absolutely no significant concerns with regard to internal controls. So that's the assurance I wish to bring to the attention of the House. In conclusion from my side, before I get to this, I've highlighted the issue that the critical issue was in page 22 is the issue to which the extent to which the company is capitalized, and that challenge is brought about by many years of having historic losses, but that is being managed between DPE and ourselves, as well as National Treasury. And to also mitigate this issue, which was a last year's issue, there has been some allocation that has been made to DNL of 700 million in the form of recapitalization. Of course, that has a particular impact, which we will come back to this House to reflect on that on the 2011-2012 financial statement. But those are the critical issues. In terms of sustainability, which talks to slide number 24 and 25, in terms of going forward, we do have adequate order cover for 2012-2013. There are a bit of challenges going into the future in terms of order cover gaps, but we are managing those. There are specific significant programs that would help us to mitigate the risk, and those are typically, and we've listed those, typically the WHOFESA program, which we are part of, and we've delivered in phase one, and we're gearing ourselves to get to phase two, and the similar program in GBET, we're also gearing ourselves to get to phase two. On the A-Data program, we're gearing ourselves to get to the production phases of phase two, and so many other such examples. Also, the export market, there are certain very specific markets that we are gearing ourselves to secure. And we've listed some of those. As you can see in the graph, and the hashed kind of hash colors are reflecting that there are areas where there are challenges in terms of going to the future. Obviously, the more we secure and lot more future orders, it talks to raising challenges around sustainability. What we've done in page 27, we have listed some of the significant programs that we are involved in that are talking to all of the issues that the CEO has spoken about in terms of skills development, in terms of high-end engineering capability, and so on. All of these are very significant programs and that we are involved in. And we listed, we just highlighted them at high level, but certainly we can talk more about those programs if so required. And then I will give it to Mike to take us on from page 29.
Thank you, the honourable members, thank Madam Chair. The reality is openly spoke about our vision and our
purpose, and in our vision we spoke about being credible, and in our purpose we say we are a values-based organization. And that's where it starts in terms of our HR strategies. We try and develop these values, and we try everything to make sure that we live these values, and we totally believe that these values would lead, and if these behaviors are exhibited by our employees, it would lead to greater growth. And these are performance in terms of operational excellence, integrity in everything we do, innovation, caring, and accountability. And we believe that would give us customer focus, efficiency, and growth in the business. We, in terms of our business, you've heard we are quite a high-tech business. We operate in a high-tech environment. So skills development is quite critical to our business in order to ensure skill continuity and to be able to ensure that the products that we make are of a high quality and they don't disappoint us in the market. And skills development starts with as we bring young engineers into the business, we put them through what we call it an engineering academy of learning, where we give them about 12 months of intensive training. They are being mentored by experienced and much more mature engineers during that 12 months. And after that, we give them certain projects that they work on to ensure that they acquire the skills in as quick as possible. We also encourage quite a lot of employees studying further, improving their studies. So we provide bursaries for employees internally. That is employee study assistance. Most of our employees come in with engineering degrees, and then they do their masters, and others go on to do their PhD. Having done that, normal skills development is also quite critical within any organization, particularly so in our organization. So we do run quite a few skill development courses. This is normal courses, seminars, and things like those, and in line with our workplace skills plan and our CET. Leadership is critical. I've mentioned values. You don't get values without the proper leadership. We need the leadership to drive this organization forward. And we've concentrated on two things for the past year. One, we developed a leadership development framework which specified certain functional behaviors that we would like to encourage or build within our leadership cadre, and we've been working in terms of making sure that those are acquired by the various levels of our leadership. We've also partnered with UNISA, their business school, and we are running a management development program with them, which is separated into three levels: junior management, middle management, and executive management. And most of our leaders are going through the succession planning. We spoke about transformation. We spoke about skills continuity. Succession planning is critical to those two processes. So we are quite strong on succession planning. We have a succession planning framework that we started working on. We are looking at strengthening it as we go along in order to make sure that it delivers what it promises to deliver. We also have a couple of youth development interventions, and these are mostly to people who are external to the organization. Being a technical organization, math and science is critical to us, and having that pool of candidates with good math and science marks who can then take up engineering as a career is quite critical to us. So we play quite a role, quite an active role around increasing the pool of kids with good math and science marks and with an ambition to take up engineering as a career. So we have what we call a school outreach program. This is Saturday schools. We provide tutoring and teaching to kids in grade 8 to 12 around math and science. And we've been seeing some quite good results coming out of that. We provide learnerships. The two learnerships that we provided last year were around the TOP program, and this was the CA program. And Madam Chair, talking to your lighthearted comment when you came in, about gender. We're also partnering with an organization called South African Women Engineers. This is an organization which is run by students, quite young, female, and it's all about saying how do they get much more females interested in taking up engineering as a career, and when they've taken up engineering as a career, how do they continue being feminine within this male environment. So we partner with them quite a lot. They run two programs, one called Girl Engineer and another called, they run a conference in Cape Town, and this is for students who are already at university. Girl Engineer is for learners who are at matric. We are also beginning to take some of their students into our business for in-service training, and we are beginning to identify, there's always self-interest, those that we believe are good enough to come into our organization. And we recruit them there. We have a Denel Youth Foundation training program, which is, its aim is basically to take kids who haven't passed matric and science well and accounting, and we put them through a year to improve those results, and they do well. Our flagship program is our bursary program. We have about 55 bursars in our system, all from first year to fourth year. We take about 15, 20 bursars a year in engineering, and this gives us a pipeline, a continuous pipeline of good top young minds coming into our business. We employ about 95%, 97% of them after completion, and these are the people who then go into our Engineering Academy of Learning. DTA, we've spoken about the Denel Technical Academy. We provide artisan training there. I will talk a little bit more when I continue with the presentation, but that is basically the crux of our youth development program. In terms of artisan training with DTA, we enroll approximately 300 apprentices per year, and with additional funding, we are talking through DPE to the NSF that we could increase that. Our commitment to the National Skills Accord is about 600 by 2040. We offer various artisanships in aviation, and we are expanding into general artisan training. We also provide advanced training in terms of certain aircraft and certain types of engines, and those are all certified. I've spoken about the Youth Foundation. also spoken about the school outreach program, grade 8 to 12. I've spoken about the learnership. I've covered the women in engineering. And then within terms of our effort, we encourage strong collaboration with tertiary institutions, mostly universities. Unfortunately, we can only go to those universities which have an engineering faculty. And that is where our focus is. Spoken about the bursary program. And our collaboration with engineering faculties at most of the universities. Obviously, the honorable members, it is also critical to ensure that the effort and the investment we make in our employees is sort of protected in terms of saying the well-being of employees needs to be looked at and encouraged. And that is one of the critical things that we do. We run wellness days, and these wellness days are used as a start in terms of checking the vital points, in terms of making people aware of the importance of these vital points, in terms of making people aware of how important it is to change lifestyle in order to be healthier. And we then move from there in terms of giving advice on how to lead a healthy lifestyle. HIV/AIDS is quite a critical part of our employee wellness program, so we do run HIV/AIDS programs in most of our entities, if not all of them. Transformation. We believe in genuine transformation that is sustainable and adds value to the business. We have transformation committees which are chaired by the business CEOs, so the entity CEOs have a responsibility to ensure that transformation happens in their entities. In terms of our performance contracts, so all our CEOs are contracted along issues along human resources and transformation, and that part of the contract in terms of the balanced scorecard carries about 20% of that performance contract. So if you haven't performed in that area, you are already at 80%. We've improved our triple BEE level going along. During last year, we were expecting a BEE level 4, and we actually exceeded that and we achieved a triple BEE level 3 rating. Our critical challenges around triple BEE is employment equity. Is employment equity and skills development. If you look at the triple BEE charter, skills development is quite conditional on your employment equity because you can't spend on people you don't have. So you need to have a transformed workforce so that you can spend on black employees. So our critical challenge is to increase our employment equity, to increase our employment representativity, to represent the demographics of the country and to make sure that we are aligned with the imperatives of our government. Our target in terms of triple BEE for this year is to maintain a level 3 that we achieved last year. We then have a couple of key high-level interventions for 2012-2013 that we'd like to bring to your attention, and maybe next time we meet we can give you progress on those. I did mention that our environment requires that you have experienced employees. It takes quite a long time to achieve competency and become a real engineer in our environment. As such, we have an aging workforce. Our average age is about 47 years, 46.8 to be actual. So bringing in young staff and training them at an early age and giving them the required experience is critical to us. If we have to do that, our name amongst the universities needs to be good. So what we're going to be doing in these coming years is to ensure that we are properly branded, we are properly positioned as an employer of choice amongst these youngsters at universities. We're also looking quite closely at relationships with universities, strengthening what I've been talking about, in particular beginning to make presentations to third-year, fourth-year students at university to ensure that by the time they leave, they know about us, they know about our products, they know about our skill level, and what I call strategic recruitment, to make sure that wherever we are, all our leaders have their eyes open for top young talent that we can bring into the business. In terms of retention, because we have to get these youngsters in, but as we all know, they are Generation Y, and they behave in a manner that we are not used to, being mature. So we need to create that environment where they are able to thrive, where they are able to feel comfortable, so that we can retain them. So organization climate is critical for us. We are currently running an organization climate survey. We are expecting the results to come out now. Once we've received those results, we will begin to put plans into place in terms of ensuring that everyone feels enabled in our environment, feels that they can thrive and reach their full potential. One of the things we'll be looking at is making sure that the organization is geared towards embracing diversity, the organization in its totality, and that diversity in all its aspects, age, gender, race, and those things. Basically creating a great place to work. In terms of development, we are looking at development in two areas. Artisan training is quite critical, and we are going to be increasing and strengthening that. We are repositioning our Danel Technical Academy to ensure that it is capable of delivering on that. Succession planning, I did mention we are going to strengthen that, and mentoring of youngsters, and giving them challenging work so that they feel that they are contributing. Leadership development is another critical part of our development, and that is, we'll talk about continuing to with our leadership development framework and continue with the UNISA management development program. Remuneration is always an issue, particularly when you're dealing with youngsters, so we need to relook our remuneration strategy, but that will depend on what the remuneration strategy that comes out of DPE will inform us. So we will wait till we get that, and our remuneration strategy will be informed by that. We are going to focus on youth, as I said, and our organization climate and improvement plans to ensure we've got a great place to work. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I think if we just go back to the slide on 44, just to round up what we have been saying up to now. If you look at Danel's position within South Africa as a state-owned company, there are certain very key issues that we need to address ourselves to. And those, in a nutshell, are: how do we contribute to the security, defense, and peacekeeping of our country? And I think one of the key issues here is that South Africa is going to become more involved in conflict resolution and peace support initiatives. And I think now one of its key objectives is to make sure that we can contribute to that environment as well. How as well do we contribute to the development challenges of our country, to our industrial strategy? How do we contribute to IPEF 2 and the new growth path? I think there what we are looking at specifically is issues of advanced manufacturing within the aerospace environment, creating more exports so that we can, and foreign exchange, spending more money on research and development, creating indigenous IP, and how do we fit into the global chain, supply chain, so that we can become part of a globalized environment within which best practice drives us further in terms of our technologies and capabilities. One of the key things that we have said that we need to do is look at more from procurement perspective, how do we empower local industry and local business to become part of our supply chain so that we can contribute to the transformation of that environment as well. Employment and skills development, I think Mike has talked a lot about our commitment to that. And, I think one of the key things is that what we need to do, and we have not been able to do that efficiently enough, I think, is to quantify
what exactly do we contribute to the economic development of our country? And then, of course, I mean, as a good corporate citizen, as a credible organization, we need to make sure that we are contributing to the environment and the way in which we work, how our processes contribute to ensuring a sustainable environment going into the future. Because by nature, it has been an industry which has not historically been very user-friendly towards the environment. And I think we're paying special attention to that as well. So what are the priorities? I mean, from a financial perspective, obviously we've got a huge debt level and we need to address that and bring that debt level down, but you can only do that if we are going to expand our revenue stream. There's a huge amount, the kind of analysis that we've done, both locally and internationally. The revenue stream, the potential revenue stream that we see for ourselves over the next 5 to 7 years is quite considerable. The real challenge that we have is how do we actually take that potential order pipeline revenue stream and convert that into actual contract source. And I think when you're talking about the sustainability and profitability and commercial viability of an organization like Denel, we've come to a very firm conclusion that we must just bring more business into the organization, because we cannot rely on government to continuously bail us out. And I think part of the problem that we've had is every time there's been an issue about the viability of Denel, government has come to its aid. I think we need to come to the table and say that in order to create a different environment, we must increase and find new revenue streams for ourselves. I mean, Denel is a huge organization. And I mean, I think if you look at the cost structure of Denel, it's quite significant. We are at the moment involved in processes internally, of looking at the operational excellence models that we need to implement in order to make sure that we are cost effective, we are managing our contracts in a way in which we are not going to lose money on those contracts, and that we operate and work with our processes in a way in which there's maximum efficiency in all our operations. One of the key issues that we have been dealing with over the last while has been the performance of the aerostructures business. They have lost a huge amount of money, and that has contributed significantly to the poor performance financially of Denel. I think we have now, and I think it's very important to mention this, we have renegotiated the Airbus contract with EAS, and within the next year to 2 years, we will see a fundamental turnaround in the manner in which that business is performing as well. And I think that has been a huge step forward in terms of addressing this particular problem. I mean, the other things Sahil has talked about, that we need to grow the order book, as I've indicated. We need to manage our cash and profitability in a much better way than what we've been doing at the moment. We need to ensure that we have the necessary skills and retention programs which will allow us to address the future requirements and objectives that we've set for ourselves. As Mike has indicated as well, that the growing, the age of the workforce is not diminishing. We need to bring new people in, younger people, which not only reflect the demographics and transformation imperatives, but also can contribute to the human capital base of Denel going to the future. And of course, then to contribute overall to the development of our country. So in conclusion, Madam Chair, and I think, you know, we'll talk about one of the key things that we want to do as well at the moment, is how do we now take Denel into the public domain and reposition it as a national asset that we can all be proud of. And Sina has been told very specifically, and I hope she's going to make a few comments on that, of how are we actually going to now reposition this organization so that we see it as a credible organization. We see it for what it can contribute to the country. We see it as an essential and critical partner and component of the overall defense and national security and strategy of our country. And that repositioning strategy has a lot to do with giving civil society, the public, parliament, government, a better understanding of the value and contribution. I think before I conclude, maybe you can make a few comments.
Thank you, Riaz. Thank you, Madam Chair and the committee members. I think I must just start by mentioning that we continue to experience challenges in the communication front, mainly because Our industry is not an easy industry. It's misunderstood. But we continue to develop strategies that will ensure that we get our messages across, that that our stakeholders and the public understand the reason for our existence and the value that we add in the country. And also, we've had challenges mainly because of our poor financial performance as well. But we have seen in the last 2 years an improvement in the relations that we have built with the media. With the headlines that you continue to see, it has really improved when we report on our financial results. We continue to reduce the loss and we portrayed in a better light compared to a few years ago. And I believe that we have also managed to strengthen most of our relationships. We've recently realized that we get lots of support from our stakeholders. The Minister of Department of Public Enterprise continues to support us. The Minister of Defense and Military Veterans continue to support us. And recently we had the Secretary of Defense visiting Dinal. So there's continued interest in Dinal and in supporting our business. As Riaz has mentioned, we've recently developed a repositioning strategy. The objective there is to ensure that to reposition Dinal to be seen as a national strategic asset that it is, and to highlight the value that Dinal adds to the country, the difference it makes to South Africa, and also to strengthen the relationships that we have with our stakeholders, including yourselves. So we will be inviting you soon to come and visit Dinal so you can see other great things that we do. The intention is to highlight all the softer things that we do that really touches on the public and make a difference. The things that people would not normally know about Dinal as a defense manufacturer. So that's the whole intention. And the strategy, we started implementing that. We'll be rolling out this year, leading up to the AAD, which is a huge African defense expo, which is happening in September. That's where we actually launched the new reposition to now. But that's the intention. And we believe that with all those initiatives that we'll be able to assist you now to get to the desired state of the turnaround state. Thanks, Ria.
Chairperson, I think in conclusion, if I just have to summarize, there are three key elements that we are addressing at the moment. So the one is obviously the external environment, which addresses our external stakeholders and our external markets and how we're going to increase the revenue streams coming into the organization. The other is the internal environment. How are we looking at the financial positioning of our company? What are we doing to empower our people? What are we trying to do in order to create an enabling environment where our people can unlock the real value of their human capital, and what are the kind of programs and processes and interventions that we are implementing at the moment to ensure that transformation is really meaningful and that we can quantify it in a way in which we can measure the success of what Mike has been talking about. And obviously to have a strategy that will allow us to give effect to those key strategic objectives that we set for ourselves. So we are quite confident that given the new objectives and shareholders' compact, if you look at our corporate plan that has been submitted to the Department of Public Enterprises, there is a definite growth path which looks to a sustainable Dinal going into the future. And hopefully with the support of all our stakeholders and the government and society, that I think in a few years' time we're going to see a Dinal that has transformed itself quite fundamentally from where we are today, both in terms of its sustainability and from a transformation perspective. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. though even before members mentioned it, I think it's full of too many acronyms. There are too many, and you know, if we as members on our own want to deal with this and understand, it's going to be like too difficult. But before I come in for questions, can I invite members to start interacting with Dineel? If I listen to Dineel, and I don't know, maybe it's because you are all new, except for Sina. You're speaking as if you are starting, you know, afresh. We're going to do this, we're going to do this. It's as if there was nothing that was done. But let me give this to members. Honorable Kroonewald, followed by Honorable... Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. In the first place, thank you for the Nell for the presentation, and from my side, I agree with the Chairperson. There's a lot of questions, and I believe there is a new management, and you've got new ideas, and you are positive, and you try, if I'm listening to you, you are very positive at this stage, and really, we want, as committee and this Parliament, to support you to make a success of the NEL, and that is the most important thing. If we look into the whole situation in South Africa, we are looking for job creation, and we expect from such an organization as the NEL that we have jobs and that we can create jobs for our youth. And you mentioned it a couple of times in your presentation, but I'm very worried. In the first place, and that is not break you down at this stage, because we want also to be positive so that you have success. And but if we are looking into the financial aspect, I'm worried, because we're looking at 700 million rand from a government who is supporting you, and that is worrying me. Because we must get into a profit situation where we must have a turnaround at the end of the day, and that is not a thing that is coming overnight. So that is a long-term process, and that is what worried me. That we in this long-term process that we have so lot of damage in the NEL that we are going down further down, and financial support from government will be bigger and bigger after every year. I want to know from you is which countries, country or countries, are our the NEL's biggest supporter at this. You mentioned it on page 17, but that is very big. I want in smaller countries, smaller countries, we support us with the manufacturing of military equipment and all that thing. And what kind of military equipment are these countries bought from South Africa? What do they really want? Because as you said, after the Cold War, that is 20 years down the line now, and we're still in a process of transformation. And that is the kind of thing I'm very worried about that. In your skill development plan, you mentioned that there's approximately 20 engineers training per year. So we can't carry on year after year and produce 20 engineers. There will not be work for them. And you mentioned it a lot of times, that must be sustainable type of work. So we can't give a lot of people skills in the engineering, but at the end of the day, there's no work for them. And 20... And what are we going to do to keep these engineers at the NEL? Because we train them, that cost us a lot of money, and university training and all that kind of thing, and at the end of the day, when they finish, they just disappear, and they are going to into other businesses, and we never saw them again. And that is also a thing that worries me. They've got the skills, and we can't use them in the NEL. Okay, then when we visited the NEL, that was about 2 years ago, we was in the factory shops and where all these big machines and things is, and the most of that machines was not working. So in the meantime, what happened since 2 years ago? Are we busy using this machinery that is a very expensive machinery that's standing there for manufacturing? What are we doing with it? Are we still standing? A lot of that shop was basically closed. When we get in there, there's a couple of people who has get training, but nothing was manufactured at that stage. You mentioned about your workforce, 4,666,1728. Where are all these people working? Because the day when we were there, there was basically no one. It was a couple of people standing around. Where are these other people? Where are they working? Thank you, Chair.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson, and also I'd like to thank them to give us this presentation, but I'll emphasize that help us in order to help you, because if you don't help us, it will be very difficult to help you. You see, I was listening to this presentation, and then I was taken by Professor. I'll come to the first one, ladies, which is worrying me. I'll start by this one. I was talking something somewhere here. Yeah. You indicated in your own presentation okay. I wanted to be protected first by the person. Unfortunately it didn't solve what was happening. You
I'm
said
sure
thanks. You said, rather than focusing to government in terms of financial, you said you need to explore other venues. If you may elaborate, that by when are you going to start to do that? And then also, which are the other venues? Because somewhere in your presentation, you spoke about the issue of the Middle East, which are supporting. But to me, we can debate that one. If I'll put an example. I was been in the Middle East for several times. Instead of buying some missiles, some people they opted to do a self-homemade one. We call it Qassam missiles. Instead of buying, they are doing their own pipe missiles or Qassam missiles. Then again, which is worrying me, the Chairperson, like that question which was asked by the Honourable Member next to me, somewhere in your presentation about the thing of funds, let me put it this way. There is a continuing trading losses in dynamic missiles, largely due to insufficient orders. Is it true? Insufficient orders. Because when you put it with the missiles, you said we among the countries which is producing the best. Not to say that we are the only country, but among. But people are not buying the product. That's what I'm saying. So again, you see, I'm worried about the money which was allocated to Denel by the government. It's true that the money was set of 700 million. In terms of the NLR aerostructures. What are the Danish plans in terms of this money? What are we going to do with that money? Because another challenge is that on page 21 in your presentation, you spoke about no significant concern regarding the internal control environment. In short, that is lack of compliance in your own mouth. In terms of the interpretation of what you said. You said this. I think it was lack of compliance in terms of... So how can you acquire so much money while there is a lack of compliance in terms of internal audit? And then also, what supplement that is on page 22, on 122 from the bottom, when it says pressure on bank facilities, it is that borrowing, keep on borrowing, keep on borrowing, but at the same time, there are no people who are buying the product. See, to me, it's very complicated. Maybe you can assist me. Because what is very much important, by when, how? I'll leave it to you. I've got a lot of questions because, you know, growing order book. In your conclusion as well, you spoke about some of these things of skill development, as our colleague said. I was impressed when we arrived there. We saw one lady was a senior, I don't know how far is, you know. Yes, we can witness. She was a star, one junior lady, young lady. But how do we contain them? How do we take them on board? Because I'm scared of one thing. We can produce or reproduce while we don't have a strategy to take them on board or to control them. As Honorable Temba was asking about the issue of the representatives. We are very serious about this because it to us, always we see boys choir coming to us to do presentation. While we have, practically we were there in demand when we saw some young girls were very intelligent, but they were the best out of all. Then Richard Person might come the time.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Also thanks for the presentation. Yeah, from the presentation from Mr. Ria said, Dinel is repositioning itself because of the challenges which are there. You know, I've got a concern more especially with state-owned enterprises or state-owned companies. Seemingly, when a new person comes in, he has got his own plans. He does not build on the plans which were there. So it means we don't have master plan. It means when he leaves, the other one will also come up with his own plans and reject the plans that were there before him. So I think that is the challenge that we have. Maybe we need to start thinking about it so that when we have a plan which will take maybe 30 years, so that anybody who comes on it, he builds on the plan that is there, not to change plans which are there. I know there were challenges. Maybe it is because of that Daniel is trying to reposition itself. But the other problem, it is financial viability of these state-owned enterprises. All the time, they have to be bailed out by the government. On their own, they cannot be viable. And it can't work like that because these are companies which should be viable and be able to maintain themselves. And in your presentation, I did not hear anything about your marketing strategy. Because what you produce, it must be sold. How do you sell them? So it means you need to have a marketing strategy. People who look on this section to market yourself overseas, so that this product should be sold. And I don't know whether in your contracts do you have a long-term contract. For instance, if somebody wants a project, maybe it will take 2 years, 3 years to be finished and so on. Maybe we could do that. Last time when we were at Dinel, we were told that we are still negotiating with South African Defence Force for a contract. And then if you can obtain that contract, it will relieve some of your financial burden. I just want to check the state of affairs now. If you have got that contract, is it relieving on your financial burden? And also, maybe if you could get a briefing on your legal battle with the government of India over the purchase of the arms there. And over the news, it was said one of your two employees was caught in Sudan. Can we get an understanding of that what happened. And also the issue of retention strategy. I did not hear it well, the retention strategy. That is the personnel that are there. What measures, what strategies do we have to retain them so that when they are educated, they don't have to go and seek for employment elsewhere. And also the issue of recruitment strategy for students. We are from different provinces. I think we raised it even last time when we were there. That is how do we inform students from provinces where we come from? Because I think we are also the mouthpiece, so that those opportunities that are there, our students they also should know from the areas where we come from. And also you also talk about Saturday classes. From which areas are you giving those Saturday classes for maths and physics? This I think everybody should benefit from those things that you are making. That's it.
Thank you, honorable members. I'm going to link that one that we've just like closed on page 33. You say you to address the challenge of skills strategies, you are focusing your social investment resources and efforts to the development of mathematics and science. Can you elaborate that? And then you say also encourage the learners to take math and science. Also, how do you do that? If you can maybe elaborate. And on page 35, learners are sourced from all 9 provinces. Can you elaborate how do you the criteria that you are using of getting these learners from provinces? Because I'm motivated to say we are from constituencies. As we are here, we are being deployed to different constituencies in different provinces. And we are in the most rural, some of us. And how do you get those learners? Because some of them are there, you know, wandering around, not knowing where to go. They've got maths and science. And I haven't heard, being in my constituency, that Dinel has made some efforts or even working with these constituencies to say, can we come and address? So tell us the criteria you are using. And I see you are even providing accommodation, because these students from rural areas in provinces will benefit from that. And maybe even if it's not now, if we can have the list of these learners from each province, and you also say, tell us gender. These are young women, these are young boys. And then there is this slide 9 where you speak about productivity improvement. You know, if one bears in mind that you have financial issues, if you can just elaborate to us on the causes of these productivity issues and how you will fix them. And then the SA Women in Engineering. Is this the nurse baby, or this is a women's organization? What's your relationship with the union, women in engineering? This, you say there is this school outreach program, what is the role of these women in engineering? And for the provinces that doesn't have, let's say, you say you're working with UNISA Business School. For these provinces, you know, how does information go to these provinces? For example, I'll cite an example of Mpumalanga and Nkomazi, Mike.
Yes, madam.
Hey, Nkomazi. Maybe or Niti Mkudu. Yabo? Yeah, Mkudu. How do you reach there? You're working with schools, but even if it's not now, but if we can have the list, you know, you list these schools in provinces so that when we are there, when we are doing our constituency work, we are able to even go to those schools and get more information and see how we can further assist you. Honorable Sibende said, assist us in order for us to assist you. So I believe that information, more information is needed from you as DNR, so that we are able to also assist and assist the young people of South Africa in all corners, in the most rural area, like I said, Lepa Emangweni. Emangweni. Yeah, was Emangweni. Yeah, well. Yeah. So if you can just give us that information so that even your roadshows, I think you, if you do roadshows, the outreach program, which schools do you go to? Which schools do you go to when you do this outreach program? Because if this committee, you were communicating with this committee, we represent provinces. If you can give us your outreach program, we are able to say if we are not in parliament, when you go to Free State, Honorable Jacobs will join you there. Thank you. We will come back.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies if there are too many acronyms, but those acronyms refer to some of the projects that we deal with the Defence Force, and we'll make sure in the future that we explain what those acronyms are.
Well, not in the future. If maybe by the end of today we can receive information on communicate with Loli.
Okay.
Because not in the future. In the future, my understanding is when you're going to come to this committee. But can we receive those acronyms as early as possible?
No problem.
Because we're going to use this document as the tool for us to work in our constituency.
No problem. We'll definitely do that. I agree with the concern that there's a new management team and new brooms are sweeping clean or attempting to, and that's the impression that was given. That wasn't at all the intention of the presentation. We cannot throw the baby out of the bathroom. I think if you look at what has happened in terms of some of the interventions that were made in the last 12 months, the fundamentals are in place. But we cannot ignore the fact that there were certain very real problems within the organization. And those problems related to its financial performance, some of the operational performance, and our inability to access the kind of revenue stream that we should in order to make this business sustainable. So that is what we are attempting to address. The fact is that DNL is a loss-making organization, and government has had to bail it out on a number of occasions. There are many very positive things in the organization which we are building on, in terms of the new interventions around the operational efficiencies, how we do our contracting, establishing better relationships with our stakeholders, particularly with the National Defense Force, so that it's more a partnership than just a contractual relationship. On many of our contracts in the past, we have lost significant amounts of money because of the fact that we did not have the kind of relationship and the contracting model that allowed us to address those timeously. So there were fundamental problems in the organization, but there were also good things in the organization which we are building on. The human capital, the level of skills, the level of technology. Those are issues that we are dealing with. But so if an impression was created that we're trying to throw everything out, that was not the intention. The intention was how to make this organization sustainable and feasible going into the future. Profitability is obviously key, and that's what we're addressing ourselves to. Because we cannot continuously rely, when there are so many huge pressures on South African fiscus, particularly on the social and developmental side, with the new infrastructure development programs that government is beginning to get engaged with. Obviously, there are going to be more pressure on defense budgets, and we're going to have to accordingly make sure that we will address those kind of revenue streams in a different way. One of the things that we have done now, we have said to the National Defense Force that DNL is a strategic partner to the Defense Force. The kind of relationship that we have must be articulated in a way which understands the strategic nature of this relationship. There has to be a model, a business model, a contracting framework that will allow us to together agree on the sustainability of DNL providing technology and products and services to the Defense Force, which is a medium long-term view, not just a short-term view. So if government has now recapitalized specifically aerostructures, it is because of the fact that government has said that in South Africa we need to maintain an aerostructures capability because it is strategic to the manufacturing environment within this country. Government has also said to us that this would be hopefully the last time that they said that this will be the last time that they will bail us out. So obviously there has to be a new strategy, a new intervention in order to ensure that we mitigate the risk of not being able to rely on that financial support that government is giving. So profitability and sustainability is a key element of the new repositioning strategy of DNL. With regard to which countries are our biggest supporters, what we have realized that we cannot, as a developing country, and the level at which we operate from an industrial perspective within the defense environment, see the developed world, whether it's the US, Europe, as our key market. Where we see the trend of spending, defense spending taking place, is in the emerging markets such as the Far East, the Middle East, certain countries in the Middle East, and certain countries in South Latin America. And that's where our new marketing strategy is fundamentally focusing it on. But not just as a supplier of products. What we're also saying is that this new marketing strategy, and we will send you the new marketing strategy, hopefully, very shortly, because we're in the process of doing it. It's not yet concluded. That we need to have smart strategic partnerships where there's technology transfer, where there's joint investment, where there's joint R&D to develop technologies for the future that we can, together with our partners, market into other environments. So if we look at the Middle East specifically, the UAE is a typical example of where we are very much involved on technology transfer, joint ventures, to not only develop new technologies, but to jointly market those new technologies. Right now, we're in the process of negotiating a very huge contract as a joint venture with the UAE on missile technology. And if that works, it will be almost a 3.5 billion rand contract for us. So those are the kind of areas that we're looking at. Countries such as Oman, Saudi, and those countries which have not been fundamentally affected by the civil strife that has been going on, are still key players in this environment that we will continue to pursue. Countries like Malaysia, Indonesia, Thailand, Vietnam, those are countries that they have money, defense spending is increasing in those countries, and we will exploit and explore those markets with a view to establishing these revenue streams that we're talking about. We already are engaged in many of these countries. As you may be aware that in South Latin America, we have just sold a number of aircraft to Ecuador. We're hoping to increase that, and not only that, where we hope to have a long-term relationship is to support that equipment going into the future for 10, 15, 20 years. We are within the IPSA environment engaged in numerous very strategic relationships with the Brazilian Defense Forces, for example, on missile technology and development. And we will continue to exploit those. Countries such as Venezuela, those are countries where we will have identified as key markets for us. And part of the new marketing plan is to create a bigger footprint for Tenel in some of these countries as an integrated approach, because before we used to go in as our own specific entities. We used to go in just to sell missiles. We used to go in just to sell this. And what is said now is that if you have a Tenel office, it must be an integrated Tenel office, which is going to market and win the support for all the Tenel products and companies, you know, because it's just a duplication of resources and you are wasting money as well. So there are a number of very key interventions that we're making on the marketing side, which will reflect our ability to access these markets in a better way. The issue of how do we sustain jobs and to keep skills retention, I think Mike will talk more about it, but if you look at the overhead cost structure, a huge part of our cost structure is salaries. Now, we've got almost 4,600 people. The revenue stream that we are generating that's coming into the business is not justifying or sustaining the number of people that we've got in the organization. We, from our principles, and we agree that we do not want to retrench people, and we're going to make sure that we keep as many people. But the only way we can do that is if we get more money into the organization. I mean, you can't sustain that number of people with the kind of revenue that we're getting at the moment. It's just not sustainable. And that's why part of our new strategy is to say that if we are not to retrench our people, if we are to look after them, to give them the quality of life and security going into the future, we need to increase the profitability and the amount of money coming into the organization. In terms of the internal interventions, maybe Mike, you want to say something about the skills retention and sustainability.
Okay, thanks for having me on this again. Retention is quite a critical issue for us. Let me start by saying currently we are not experiencing alarming levels of staff turnover, right? Our turnover is running at about 6.4%. For the past year. That's the number of people we've lost. We are worried, however, about where we are losing the people, because we do not want to lose these young engineers, because they are the future. So everything we do is around saying, how do we retain these resources? I mentioned when I spoke about retention, I said one of the things, let me just start by one of the things we've done, is to say, how do we begin to understand the young generation and what makes them keep their needs and how they look at the world of work these days rather than before. So we've run some training for our senior managers in terms of understanding the various generations and what makes them keep and what do we need to do then to make sure that we are able to retain the younger generation. The second part of it is the work that they want. These are young engineers coming out of university. One of the things that really drives them is challenging work. So we are actually saying, how do we make sure that they are up to speed as quickly as possible so that we can deploy them and give them challenging work, bearing in mind our environment is quite a risky environment. So one of the things we've done here is to create projects that are not driven by a client, that are driven internally. And in terms of their career management, we identify those that want to be project managers, those that want to be systems engineers, and we put them through, give them these various roles in this risk-free project where they are able to play around, if I may use that term, and apply their engineering knowledge. That's one of the critical factors we are looking at to ensure retention. The youngsters want to move. They want to move quicker. Our environment is you gain competence in a very long period of time.
So one of the things we are saying, how do we create that movement within the organization so that they don't go out of the organization to find that movement? So we are looking at strategies around that. So we move them every 3 years, we put them in a different. It's going to be challenging, but it's stuff that we are looking at. The organization climate that I'm talking about is quite critical for them as well. Is our average age 46.8 years? A 22-year-old engineer, how do they feel if they come into that environment? We want to make sure that we create an environment where they can feel comfortable. We want to make sure that we create an environment where the 48-year-old is quite comfortable mentoring the 22-year-old, and they have a good mentoring relationship, and they both learn from each other. We do have some world-class engineers, so these youngsters can learn quite a lot from those. Remuneration will always be an issue. You can never pay to everyone's satisfaction. So once we look at remuneration, it's not the end all and be all, looking at where we are in terms of our financial situation. But we've got a program where we try and identify our top performers and make sure that our top performers are paid accordingly, so they stay with us. But outside organizations will always put a premium on highly trained engineers, and they don't mind pitching them and paying them more. And then development, just training, making sure that these people are trained, that they are getting the training and development that they look forward to. That's the part on retention. Those are the things we are trying to do to retain the people that we have invested so much. In terms of our provincial spread, where do we go? We will have to come back to you in terms of where does each and every one of them come from. But we use various methods of communication in terms of our programs, particularly the student training program. I've spoken to my people and they've given me some. We advertise in the Star. We advertise in Kempton Park, this is Ebofuleni and the greater Johannesburg area. We also use the government publication Vuvuzela for other areas and the Achiever for corporate. We also do quite a lot on Facebook, our Facebook page, and that is DTA, and our website. We do local visits as well. And this year we visited the Eastern Cape. Mpumalanga was Matibiti, Graskop, Pilgrim's Rest. That's where we've been in terms of Mpumalanga. And soon we are looking at doing Soweto and in the northwest, Morokweni in the northwest. That's the area we are looking at visiting. In terms of the food outreach program, we've got one in the northwest, Orkney, Matosan. Used to be called Fall Ridge Tech, Technical High. That's where we are. We're also in Ebureni, Pretoria area, where one of our businesses is situated, Olive and Old Bosch, which is an informal settlement. That's where the other one. And the other one is in Reha Park. We are looking at starting one in the Eastern Cape, but that is still coming. I will have to provide you with those details as and when we get to them. In terms of universities, we visit almost, I would say, all of the universities who have an engineering faculty. We are in Nelson Mandela, University of Pretoria, Cape Town, Stellenbosch, Northwest. We visit their career fairs, and as I was saying, our next step is to start addressing. So it's not me. Universities, yes, those are the universities we visit. In terms of SA Women,
South African Women in Engineering. This is an organization which was started by students themselves. Some of them have now passed and they are working for this organization. Quite a few of companies that recruit engineers sponsor them, and we are one of those companies. BH Billiton is in there, Unilever is in there. Quite a few of the big engineering companies are in there in terms of that recruitment. Their girl end is run mostly from KwaZulu-Natal, Wits, and I think they are looking at going into Mpumalanga. That is the girl end part of it. These are the kids that are still doing metric and things like that. The student one, the whole idea, they have a conference in Cape Town every year, and they invite speakers, and the whole idea is about encouraging these students to take up careers in engineering. In terms of how do we actually promote engineering through math and science, I think we all know one of the critical barriers for young learners to take up engineering as a career is poor marks in math and science. So what we are doing is to increase those pass rates in math and science, so you increase the pool of people who are capable of taking engineering up as a career. So that's what we do. In one of our school outreach programs, the one I spoke about in Oliver North Bosch, we also, and Rehapa, we use our young engineers as well to tutor them. And what is interesting is that the youngsters show them the shortcuts. This is how you do it. This is how easier it is. And then they talk to them in a young language than the language that we would use. Although that has got us into trouble a little bit with the authorities in terms of saying the kids get marks for each step, even if you come up with the wrong answer, but as long as you follow the process and the formula, you get some marks. So we have to say to our tutors, please make sure that you follow the syllabus as well. It's that combination of young and old, and showing them that math and science is not this beast that people should be scared of, and if they pass well, then they are able to take up math and science. Thank you. I think I've covered most of the questions that are directed at the HR.
I'll take some of them, that particularly those that are likely financial in nature. There were two questions from Honourable Member Honnevold on the visit to Denau. In particular, that the premises you went into, there wasn't a hell of a lot happening. You visited Kempton Park, whereas there are four or more other sites where Denau is active. Kempton Park is one. The other one is in Littleton, on the other side of Pretoria. There will be the other one in the Pretoria West. We have a site in the northwest. We have a site, two sites here in the Western Cape. So if we talk about those number of employees, they are in all of those geographies. So that's why you then saw a plant that was promising, but you said there wasn't a hell of a lot. There's a history around the site. You had gone to Denau Aerostructures. Denau Aerostructures support largely a 400M program, which at the time was delayed, and there was not a hell of a lot happening. It's lined up to be ramped up over the next two to three years. And Riaz did point out that that underlying contract had to go through a renegotiation. So that's a background to the site you went to. I think I've covered your two questions. Where are these people? They indeed there. There's a concern to express, Honourable Member Spande, a concern about the issues of funding, and you're saying that, look, there will always be a need to fund if there aren't sufficient borders. Riaz, in response to that question, has pointed out that there is a marketing strategy, and there is a requestioning within the organisation of our approaches in terms of how we interface with stakeholders, in terms of how they assist us go to market, identifying the market, challenging ourselves in those market spaces, and to ensure that we do convert to those markets. What I wish to highlight is that during the May 2011, as we were wrapping up these accounts, we won about 5 billion rand worth of orders that came into our environment, and those orders are to be executed over the next 5 to 7 years. And it does also address the question of, say, are your contracts short-term at last? You deal with them over a three-month period, or do you deal with them over a longer period of time? And indeed, you deal with them over a longer period of time, some of them are short period of time. But also, I think the other point is that there is a fairly big order book that we are, not order box necessarily, order pipeline. In other words, those are opportunities which we have a potential to execute and ability to execute if we were to win them. And there are strategies to ensure that those opportunities are converted into orders. So there is a combination of factors. So if you ask me what is my take, having said what I've said, there is a promising future than has been the case over the years. But I'll go on. So the follow-up question was to say, if you then go to the 700 million, what is that 700 million going to be used for? That was allocated specifically to fund the working capital. In other words, as we, in part, within the aerostructures business, there needs to be a ramp up in preparation to produce on a full scale for a program called the A400M. This is specifically to ensure that we execute on that program, but in also in so doing, ensure that we are a country geared to play an active role in the aerospace and defense industry. The other question that was posed was the issue around controls. I did not mean to say there was lack of control. There are no control issues. But as in any environment that is being audited, there would be one or two cases where there might be certain level of paperwork that needed to have been in place that is not to the extent that it needed to have been. So that's the point that we're saying there were no significant internal control issues, and that's the point that we're making. And in the annual report, which has been audited, bears testimony to that. The other point on the bank facilities, as we gear ourselves for big orders, the banks want a certain guarantees to be in place in support of those contracts. And then once you secure, say, 5 billion rand worth of contract, as that contract is concluded, there are certain guarantees that need to be in place to give certain assurances to the countries that are giving us work. And that pressure comes from that end. It's not that necessarily we are going to borrow more, but there are certain guarantees that ought to be in place. The other question is, I think the Honourable Member Jacobs raised the question of, at the time of visit, there was a contract that was being negotiated. I assume that contract may have related to a who faced that, which is approximately about 10 billion or so worth of contracts that SNDF had placed with us, of which phase one had been contracted, but phase two we are still yet to move to, and that is still in progress. And I've covered the area. The last one from Honourable Member Chairperson. The one was to say, we talk about productivity improvements, what do we really mean? Okay. It links to the question or to the comment that we have made to say, if you have a 4 billion or 3.2 billion turnover business, in other words, sales are 3.2 billion, but you've got 4,600 employees, there is a certain relationship that has to be maintained between the turnover and the number of employees. we've agreed with the shareholder that should be, for each employee, they must be driving about a million rand of revenue. We are lower in that, which means that we must increase the orders without necessarily increasing the employees, or alternatively, reduce the employees, which is obviously difficult one to reduce the employees. And that is that productivity challenge comes from that relationship. But also we are comfortable that we have sufficient strategies to improve the revenue line.
Honorable
Sibande. Ma, thank you about the responses, but...
Honorable Sibande, followed by Honorable Jacob.
Yes.
But also to inform you that...
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, but I wanted maybe to put another question that I think there was a recommendation which was made by the minister when you have given that 7 million about the issue of turnaround strategy. If you may assist us about the time frame of that turnaround strategy. And then also, you see, if I was happy because you were just explaining during your presentation about the issue of the jobs that when you were clarifying to Mr. Kroner. But myself, I wanted to make another so that you can clarify us more. You see, in your own presentation on page, I think it's page 5, somewhere there you indicated that manufactured by 13 businesses, entities, 6,400 direct employees, and over 30,000 indirect true multiplier effect with 10 offices outside South Africa. Maybe if you may clarify us, how many people are being employed outside South Africa? Because I'm scared by some of this structure we can put more money while it doesn't serve us. It serves people from outside. Why I'm raising that, you'll find that maybe most of the embassies is diverse. You do have people from outside and people from inside in that particular area. You see, another question which I might raise to Chairperson. You see, when you were outlining the purpose, after the vision, the purpose, you raise some of the issues as challenges. I'm sorry to correct you. You indicated that as stakeholders, how job creation, skills and development, and social investment, and then you said how enhancing local technical and manufacturing base, etc., up until you reach that one of foreign policy and regional security objectives. Yes. To me, I'll go deeper with that one of foreign and regional security objectives. I'll put an example. See, we were involved when we were assisting DRC because we do have two Congos, Congo Brazzaville and Congo DRC. But at the end, they were signing agreements with other countries, not with us. Who will assist them? So, maybe, if you can maybe clarify us that how does it affect us, if it affects us. But if it's also assisting us, how? Because you raise it as a challenge. And then you also raise the issue of multi-race or multi, what is it? These discussions, interactions with other countries as well. Maybe if, how does it assist us? Thank you, Chairperson, I'll put it there.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. There are two questions which have not been answered, which I put. Your legal battle in the employees' court in Sudan, those have not been responded to. The other, that, just a follow up on that, what do you do with your employees who come up with new ideas? Let's say they want to improve on the on the equipment that they want to come up to with innovative ideas on that. What do you do with that? The other one, these weapons that you are selling, are they not going to be a threat to us? How will you counter if you attack with your own weapon? Do you have any strategy to counter attack?
I don't know, I was going to come to those as well. But there are a number of other questions which still needed responding to, which I will do now. The issue of insufficient orders, for example, for the missiles, which was raised earlier on. I think missile technology is not something that all countries either have the ability, the means, or the resources to acquire. And we must also understand that with defense contracts, there are often long lead times. I mean, to get the contract from its beginning to closing the contract could be anything from 3 to 5, 7, 8 years even. So we have this facility there, Denel Dynamics, which makes these missiles. But for example, the South African National Defense Force doesn't have the financial resources to acquire the production phase. So we've completed the development phase. But to go into the production phase requires a whole new contract with allocated funds. And that still has not been done. And but we are in the process of discussing that with the Defense Force. And hopefully, in the next short while, we'll come to some kind of resolution as to how we're going to do that. In terms of internal efficiencies, why is it that we are losing money on some contracts? The fact is that some of the contracts that we engaged in, the customer said they wanted X, and then a few months after they increased the scope of the product. We did not often understand the complexity of some of these projects, and we lost money there. So what we are doing now is to make sure that we have operational efficiency programs, operational excellence programs, which addresses the shortcomings in our contracting model. And that's what we are busy with at the moment. And I agree there must be some continuity. And the repositioning of Denel is not so much to say that this is a new Denel and this is how we're going to do things differently. It's about how do we make people begin to understand that this is a national asset, that we need to work together in an integrated way, we need to support one another so that we can maintain this asset that we've got. And again, I agree, the financial viability of state-owned companies is of great concern to government and to the public. And I think that is why that there's a special concerted effort to make sure that we make the kind of interventions and plans in collaboration and in an integrated way with the rest of government in terms of its accountability, in terms of the infrastructure development programs that will allow us to make these SOCs financially viable going into the future. Address the marketing strategy. And part of that marketing strategy is also to create more smart partnerships and country partners. We talked about how do we address the relationship of bilaterals or multilaterals with other countries. From a Denel perspective, what we do, the Department of Defense, the Minister of Defense, has numerous memorandums of understanding and defense committees with many, many countries, which are official documents which are signed between the two countries bilaterally. And in those documents, it's articulated and stipulated very carefully what level of industrial cooperation there will be. And it is within the ambit of those MOUs that we go into a country. We do not go into countries where there is no official relationship between the Department of Defense and the Department of Defense of that country. And that is the mechanism that we use. The status of the Hoof Acer program, I think you have addressed it. We're in the process of right now negotiating the final contract. It was delayed by the Defense Force because there were issues around the financial viability of continuing with that project. We seem to have come to a consensus around that, and we are, as I've indicated, in the process right now of negotiating whether that contract will go ahead or not.
the status of the relationship with India. As you are aware, that issue has been going on since 2006. There are two processes that are going on. The one is a civil litigation case against Dinal, and the other is a criminal investigation against Dinal. We have just, in fact, on Monday, briefed the Minister of Public Enterprises about this particular issue, because as you are aware, that the President of India is on an official visit here at the moment. There have been numerous attempts to resolve this thing through different kinds of interventions, both at the political level and at an official level, through the bureaucrats. We have not made progress with that. There is now a concerted effort between ourselves, Dinal, and the Department of Public Enterprises to address this particular matter, both within the legal framework and also from a bilateral perspective between the South African government and India. What I can say is that from legal counsel is that Dinal was blacklisted there on an assumption that there was some wrongdoing that took place. In all these years, there has still to be a formal document that has been put forward to us, laying out very clearly what were the what were the criminal conduct or charges leveled against us that led to the blacklisting of Dinal. So we are engaged in a formal process at the moment. Both countries agree that we need to resolve this. At the last IFSA conference that took place, the President of our country and Prime Minister of India also addressed this issue. And we are making a concerted effort because it is impacting very adversely on our ability to cooperate on a defense level. And it's a huge market for us potentially. So the discussions are ongoing. It is receiving attention as we are speaking now. Both the legal teams locally and in India are addressing what are the possible solutions that we can come to in order to expedite the conclusion of this matter. With regard to the Sudan issue, you are aware of the fact that we have a company called NACM, which is involved in civil security environment, in post-conflict, assisting in post-conflict resolution. What the company essentially does is that it goes in and is contracted primarily by the United Nations to clear landmines and unexploded ammunition and explosives in order to make it safe for civilians and government to use roads and other infrastructure in a safe way. We have done a huge amount of work in Mozambique, in Libya, in Iran, Iraq, in Somalia, and in Sudan, particularly after the independence of South Sudan. We've been working with the United Nations on a United Nations contract. We have also been granted immunity by the United Nations. We are protected by the protocols of the United Nations. Our vehicles are registered as UN vehicles. Our information says to us that the two employees of Dinal, the one is a South African national, the other is a South Sudanese national, were in a vehicle that was led by the person who is the UN person in charge of that particular operation, who insisted on taking a route, a shorter route, which was not protected by the South Sudanese authorities. And they were abducted in what we have been told very clearly is South Sudanese territory. They were then flown to Khartoum. You're aware of the fact that there was a Norwegian national and a British national who worked for the United Nations. The United Nations, the British government, the Norwegian government, and the South African government, together with our ambassador, the defense attaché, and Durko, our foreign affairs, the Department of International Cooperation, is right now busy with negotiations in order to secure the release of the two individuals and, of course, the two UN personnel as well. We have been told that the United Nations will also consider the two Dinal employees as being part of the negotiated settlement with the UN and that process. The latest we've heard on the individuals is that they have been seen, that they are in good health, they are being fed well. But of course, there's an investigation going on from the Sudanese government, the North Sudanese government, which hopefully will be concluded shortly and we will secure the release of those individuals. From our side, we are quite clear that we have not violated any international law, that we have not transgressed the national boundary of Sudan, from South Sudan, and we will do everything and we are doing everything to secure the release of the individuals. The retention strategy, I think Mike spoke to that, as well as the recruitment strategy.
We will provide you, Madam Chair, with more information in terms of the roadshows and what is this repositioning communication strategy so that we can rely on your assistance. Obviously, it does not make sense for us not to work together, and we will make every effort to make sure that we are giving you the correct information that will allow you to assist us to the best of your ability. The time frame for the number of foreign employees.
I think specifically in the area in which I think HR should in theory be in a better place to answer this one, but
if you don't have that information,
I was going to get back to that exactly that point to say there are not a lot of people placed overseas, but we rather give you a more firm to say offices in this particular country. You got three, if you got three, you got four, if you got four. We'll write back to you on that.
Madam Chair, the time frame for a turnaround strategy. We have just, as I indicated earlier, submitted the new corporate plan for Danel, which is a 3-year plan. If you look at that plan, it is hoping that by the end of that 3-year period, we will then be back in a positive situation, and we will have addressed the revenue streams as I've indicated to you. And all the interventions that we are making on the marketing side, on the profitability side, on the cash management side, on our HR side, hopefully will be incorporated in that turnaround strategy. So it's a 3-year period that hopefully we will achieve a new situation for Danel going into the future. With regard to the foreign and regional security initiatives, one of the shortcomings that we've had is that we have not been as effective as possible within the African environment. There are many bilateral, multilateral, regional security institutions, organizations that we are party to, for example, within SADC, the African Union, United Nations in Africa. And where we have seen fit, we have used those mechanisms to address how we can assist regional initiatives to create stability within conflict environments. So, in that sense, for example, with MACAM, we've been in the DRC. We have now started assisting on selling equipment to countries like Kenya, where to increase their ability to deal with the regional problems that they are having at the moment. In the AU and the UN, we are very active there, trying to find opportunities where we can assist with the technology and the solutions that will create a better environment for particularly what we call interoperability. I think part of the problem is that when you put an African Union standby force together, for example, to deal with issues in Somalia, there is very seldom interoperability between the different forces, the components that make up the force, in things like, for example, communication systems. So, of course, as an extension of our foreign policy, as an extension of our initiatives to ensure regional security, we would like to see Danel as being part of that process to create a secure environment for development and economic growth going into the future. The issue of employees with new ideas.
Most of our entities have reward mechanisms, and these are mechanisms over and above salary, which are meant to recognize performance beyond the normal. So suggestions tend to come within that. They are accepted. But a good example I would like to give is our missile company, Danel Dynamics. They have a youth forum that they encourage as part of retaining the youth and making sure that the voice of the youth is heard within the business. And this youth forum has developed what they are calling a knowledge hub. And they are running this amongst themselves. And they've recently, about a week and a half ago, they ran a symposium where all the people who contributed articles to the Knowledge Hub were presenting their ideas to the business. And most of those ideas are going to be taken on board. And we just need to manage the issue of youth versus maturity and experience and things like those. But ideas are definitely welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
I think maybe just the last word that from our side.
Before the last word.
Sorry, never just falling to this bit. My apologies.
Before the last word from you, I see you've got programs in support of HIV AIDS awareness. But if I look at the searches being held once a year, and also posters and banners being like displayed during that national, what happens, you know, I don't really imagine it, but for those who are affected, or how do you assist? Because if you're going to make an awareness during the year, you don't care, huh? You don't care, but I mean, how do you assist those who are affected rather than, you know, if you held this awareness once a year? I don't say you must every week, you know, do the campaign or whatever, but there must be a way of, like, making sure that everyone is, like, given the support. I don't want to put the last bullet, the artist, I'm not talking about this, but only the first two bullets on page 40, the awareness session helps once one week per year. Is that enough? And the posters and banners being displayed, you know, they can be there forever, the posters and banners in the passage, so that every day when I pass, then I know, I remember that I'm going to go and do 1, 2, 3.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Point well taken. That 1 week per year is usually around World AIDS Day. It's during that week that we really go into these big campaigns. But most of our entities are affiliated to ICAS. ICAS is this organization that provides an upfront service for employee wellness in terms of psychological wellness, physical, financial wellness. So those ICAS does provide a generalized service in terms of HIV awareness and health, psychological health and stuff like that. Our factory, which is the one that makes bullets, actually has a social worker on site employed, and they would provide that. But point well taken, it's not a subject that is, yeah, there.
I think, you know, you're aware of the fact that the latest defense review has just been completed and it's now going out for public discussion. And that document has a specific chapter in it which deals with the South African defense industry. And essentially it identifies what is the role of the South African defense industry, what are the issues around sovereignty, what are the issues of strategic capabilities, how do we treat foreign companies coming into this country, into our country, and trying to sell defense equipment, how do we deal with foreign companies coming into South Africa and acquiring equity within defense industry companies locally. So it addresses a vast spectrum of issues within the industry. Also, it addresses itself to the long-term sustainability of these key strategic and sovereign capabilities. What is very positive for us there is that it clearly identifies the NEL as supporting the development, manufacturing, and the life cycle support of equipment, weapons, systems, which are sovereign and strategic. It also goes further to say that there must be an agreement, a framework within which there is rational planning, which is medium to long-term and sustainable, so that the relationship between the existence of the NEL and the National Defense Force is going to be one which is going to allow both the National Defense Force to meet its operational and technology and equipment requirements, but at the same time allow the NEL to have a planning perspective which will allow it to address issues of sustainability and viability, whatever.
once this defense review has been completed, hopefully there will be a much better understanding between the National Defense Force and ourselves as to how do we support one another so that both organizations prosper going into the future. And we are quite excited about it, and hopefully it will locate the position of TENEL as a strategic partner to the National Defense Force. I think part of the problem is that we have, you know, if we don't get the contract, we don't get the contract. But if a private sector company doesn't get the contract over a 12, 18-month period, or contracts, you start looking at cutting costs. You start taking people out. You can, that's their prerogative. They have the decision to take that. We have an imperative and a responsibility as a state-owned company to not do that, to secure and preserve our jobs to the best of our abilities. So we cannot be treated as a private sector company. And this document now, for the first time, clearly identifies and articulates the strategic role that TENEL plays within the defense and security environment within our country. So we are very much looking forward to engaging with the Defense Review Committee and the Department of Defense as to how we're going to implement this relationship going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The last one from Honorable Jacobs.
Yeah, they have not answered it. The one which has said, if we attack with our own weapons, we have a counter
protection. Can you respond to that?
I think it's in most countries that you're going to have a situation where if you have a defense industry and somebody wants to engage in espionage and defect to an enemy or whatever else, then they will bear the consequences of that. And we have due process, we have secrecy acts, we have all sorts of things which mitigate against people, and the punishment for doing that mitigate against people doing that. So, you know, we have not had any kind of fundamental problem with it. There's not been. So the law is so strict that people will think twice about doing that. And if you get caught doing that, I mean, the consequences are just horrendous. So, and we do what most other countries do, to have those kind of stringent laws which protect our information and our intellectual property. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thanks to those also who joined us late from the Department of Public Enterprises. How can you join us? I didn't say you must respond. I didn't say you must respond. But next time, arrive early. We apologize for starting the meeting before the officials arrive. Ria and your team, thank you very much. We're looking forward to the working relationship with this committee. As I said earlier, that we represent provinces, and we want to actually also advertise TENEL so that the rural areas know who is TENEL and what does TENEL do. Thank you very much, Juan. Members, don't go. We've got just one item also to look at. okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Honorable members, I thought we have minutes. We don't have minutes for the meeting.
Thank you.